This is Rebecca Lowe, or Rebecca Lua, if you listen to Suboptimal Radio, and you are listening to Men in Blazers on the NBC Sports Network.
It's unbelievable!
From the Embassy Row studios, in the crap part of Soho, it's the Men in Blazers podcast, Rog.
Oh, Dave, good to be back.
Yes.
I'm not too big to say this. Mazel tov, mate.
Yeah, that was said with all of the feeling of a stone, Rog.
On the title.
Title. You look really happy for me.
Yeah, this was a weekend of really just one terrible piece of news after another.
Yep.
Chelsea's title.
Great news.
Royal Baby 2.
Oh, great news.
Terrible news.
Charlotte Elizabeth Diana.
Yeah. She's of no relative. I care more about the Kardashian baby than
David
I do about...
David Beckham joins Instagram.
I have a list of babies that I care about. The Kardashian baby was on the bottom.
Uh-huh.
It's just been replaced.
David Beckham joins Instagram, Rog. Big news.
Yeah, I spent a huge amount of the weekend trying to work out about what I gave less of a crap about.
Yeah.
The Royal Baby 2.
Yeah.
Return of the Royal Baby.
Uh-huh.
Or David Beckham turning 40.
Yeah.
Something of very little relevance to me. And then it was joined... Yeah. Obviously, Chelsea's title, yeah. Joined by a third or a fourth, I've lost count, slightly damp squib of an occurrence, which yeah. I was so excited for.
Well, the Derby was a good horse race, though, Rod.
Yeah, it was, but Dortmund didn't win.
Yeah, Dortmund didn't win.
I may or may not have lost a lot of money.
Yeah.
Because I thought Jurgen Klopp, he knows about horses. Yeah. I thought that Dortmund was going to do all right.
American Pharaoh, Dortmund just couldn't hang with American Pharaoh down the stretch.
And then Manny P.
Yeah.
Oh, Manny. Although we were on Team Manny, and then we changed to Team Michelle Beadle. But we were quite excited.
And Rachel Nichols.
For Manny P against Floyd Mayweather.
Yeah.
A man who boxed as if he was coached by Jose Mourinho.
Yeah.
For one night only. Boring, uh-huh. Boring. Mayweather. Hashtag. By the way, why do people trust the judges in boxing, though? I don't understand it.
There's no historical reason to. And I also, why do people trust... The boxers. I mean, Manny, we love Manny P, but it's now revealed that he had a...
rotator cuff.
...terrible problem while he was fighting. He didn't reveal before the fight. You've got to think. Everybody says Pitchers to me, there's no way there's going to be a rematch. There's no way there's going to be a rematch. Jason Gay, our mate from the Wall Street Journal, tweeted out that for anybody saying there's not going to be a rematch, remember, they did make Paul Blart too. So I think we are going to see some kind of rematch there.
I just don't understand why they trust the judges in the boxing.
Uh-huh.
They should do what a proper sport does.
Yeah.
They should go to penalties. They should have the two boxers. This is what I thought about. You should have the two boxers stand in the middle, toss a coin, and then they just get to take three kind of pops at each other's in either the ghoulies or the face.
The ghoulies?
Yeah.
The undercarriage?
Yeah.
The grundle?
I'd watch that.
I would. I think if it go to the head would probably be better.
It wouldn't
last very long if you're going to the ghoulies, Rog. If you're going to the ghoulies, that's not lasting long.
If you paid $99 and then sat through those 12 rounds, you want ghoulies.
Yeah, maybe you do. Maybe you do. I'll rethink that.
At Mike Bond 3 tweeted us to say, if either of you were prize fighters, not lightly, but let's pretend we are, who from the Premier League would you bring into the ring with you before a big fight?
What, to advise us or...
He didn't give any more specs. It's a very interesting question.
So are we the prize fighters, or is the person we're bringing into the ring the prize fighter?
Oh, I thought we were the fighters.
Oh, we're the fighters?
Yeah. I just tasted my own blood in my mouth when I read the tweet, to be honest.
Yeah.
I thought mine's girl. I thought maybe I had the biohacking Fenwa, beast mode. Yeah. But then I thought, Davey.
No, I'd want Matic. I want a Serbian.
Yeah.
I was just in LA and I had a boxing training session with a Serbian, 6'4". Serbian boxer. It was like training with Matic. And these Serbians, they're mean, Rog.
Oh,
not Derek. Derek, lovely.
I'd want somebody... That's not a very Serbian name. Derek.
Derek, very Serbian dude.
Derek. Is his brother called Steve? If I'd want someone else from Chelsea.
Yeah.
If I had to take anyone from Chelsea.
Uh-huh.
And we'll talk about this later in the show.
Uh-huh.
It would be Jose.
Mourinho.
Yeah.
Oh, the mind games.
Yeah, I always believe, and history has always taught me well on this, taught your way out the fight.
Yeah,
Jose would talk you out of that fight, even with the millions watching around the world.
Yeah.
And then I thought...
And then he'd punch you in the ghoulies.
It's all stupid. Who would you want from a fight from the football world? Barry Hearn? Because he'd only stand by you if you knew you were going to win.
Or if I was going to make some money.
Yep.
Or lose in a spectacular fashion.
God, talk about unspectacular. The most interesting thing I learned from this whole fight of the century, David,
yeah,
is that Floyd Mayweather's enormous entourage...
Yeah.
I read this in The Guardian, includes one man whose sole job it is in life, his job for which he's paid.
Yeah.
I'm assuming he gets a payday, really hefty salary.
Yeah.
His sole job in life is to pop chewing gum into Mayweather's mouth while he rests.
Good job. I just love the fact that Floyd Mayweather travels with a private jet flying behind his private jet, yeah, bringing his entourage so that they're there when he lands too.
Yeah. When I read about the chewing gum popper,
yeah,
so many questions.
Yeah.
So many. Like, what skills, Dave, does such an occupation require in terms of, like, guild apprenticeship?
You could lose a finger in that job very easily.
Yeah.
You put your finger inside the mouth of a sleeping
heavy
man.
Heavy machinery. Are you born with those skills, do you think, Dave, or do you have to develop them? Is it nature or is it nurture? How does the employer know that the potential chewing gum popper is the one, as someone who hires a lot of people?
Well, there are two philosophies of hiring. Either you create the job and then you go off and find the man to go and fill the job. But what I think is more likely happen in this situation is the other way you hire, is that you have a person and then you think, what would be the perfect job for this person? So I believe that it wasn't the job that came first, Rog. It was the person came first. And then they thought, okay, Dave, what do we do with Dave? What would he be good at? They think, would he be good at refueling the second jet? The Range Rover? Well, could we have him in charge of booking the second jet? No, I couldn't do that. Could he secure young ladies for us when we arrive in a new... No, he wouldn't be good at that. You know what he could do? What? He could be in charge of giving Floyd his chewing gum.
While he rests.
Well, he wouldn't work when he was awake, but he could do it when he's sleeping.
I think he'd have a separate person for the awake.
Yeah, for somebody more qualified than Dave.
Yeah, a different person. Yeah. I mean, here's the question ultimately. Do you really need a chewing gum popper? Or do you only have a chewing gum popper? Or a second jet, Dave, for that matter, so that people write about you having a chewing gum popper? Or a second jet, and that's the true value of the hire or the jet. Is there a certain point where it just becomes so ridiculous you're essentially pumping your own story?
I don't have a degree in advanced entourage dynamics. I haven't really studied entourages.
I think
in
some
a really
of our GFOPs are probably the sociologists. But,
yeah, that's a good question. It's all about the sociology of an entourage. Is it a more desirable thing? Is it a more impressive thing if the jobs in your entourage are just fringe and out there and semi-useless? And
by
pointless?
The way, if there are any of GFOPs out there who are sociologists in university studying entourages, that job, to me, it's almost as wonderful as a chewing gum pop-up.
We do see it quite a lot here at Embassy Row, at the Embassy Row Studios. We make Andy Cohen's talk show, Watch What Happens Live. That's come up before on the pod. And several celebrities do turn up with enormous entourages. And I do think that there is on the whole, I'm not saying this about Floyd Mayweather, but on the whole, it is the lesser the celebrity, the more entourage that they have. And many people have their social media entourage following behind them, just telling them that they are trending right now in North Dakota somewhere on one, like some tiny little thing, just following behind them doing the whole thing. Are the important people on the whole, they don't really have entourages.
Talking about important people, David.
Yeah.
Did you watch the NFL draft?
I don't completely understand the NFL draft. I think this is a place which I've spent 26 years in America now. I still don't quite understand the appeal of the NFL draft.
Oh, I was mesmerized this year.
You were.
It's the first time I've ever been exposed to Mel Kiper.
Really? You've never known Mel Kiper? Mel Kiper is a legend.
In a biblical, non-biblical sense.
He's a legend, Mel Kiper.
Here's my questions about Kiper.
Yeah.
What
is on his head?
How? And whither?
Really?
Yeah.
In what particular regard to Mel Kiper?
He's less a sportscaster. He's more living proof that in America, this country we both love, if you say things with enough confidence, people believe you.
Yeah.
Even though the words that come out of your mouth are patently untrue.
Yeah.
I mean, I get the hair, Dave. I do get the hair.
Yeah.
It's as magnificent as that arch in St. Louis.
St. Louis. St. Louis. Right.
But the insight I have into the NFL draft, no, the insight you have not understanding the NFL draft, I think is about as useful as Mel's when you actually record what he says during the draft and then match it up as to what happens. I don't have a big gulp as a bladder like he does. That's something else he's got going for him. But he's so continuously misinformed and misguided. I wouldn't be surprised if he was secretly responsible for Liverpool's transfer dealings under Brendan Rodgers.
But it is an exercise in forecasting what will happen that you can never be completely accurate in.
Yep.
We laugh a lot about journalists who follow soccer in the US constantly talking about sources tell me, which usually means other newspapers who reported it before.
Daily Telegraph.
But it's impossible to forecast what will happen in a draft when it's secret.
Yeah,
you might have a couple of pieces of information. You're not going to know everything.
No, most of
and
them
then know. The draft isn't exactly a forecast of how these players' careers will turn out when they actually go and play real football. What I'm finding a little bit about American football, and I do really enjoy American football.
Love it.
But what I'm finding more and more and more is that the draft, which is, you know, just really a hiring process... And the fantasy
for chewing gum game. Poppers,
exactly, and for future chewing gum poppers, and a fantasy, the fantasy elements of football are starting to take away. They are a bigger narrative. They're a bigger story than the actual football itself. I would say that the draft does have a lot of narrative,
and this year
particularly with Jameis Winston, who went number one, a lot of narrative with him. Rich.
Team Beadle. Yeah. As I watched the draft, Dave, I kept hearing the voice of my deeply. Departed, thank God, and not at all lamented English teacher, Mr. Stott, who we've talked about a lot back on the old Sirius days.
Open all available oxygen inlet valves,
lads. That's how he used to walk into every classroom. 5 minutes late, we'd all be chatting and he'd charge in and say, open all available oxygen intake valves, lads. It smells like a Turkish brothel in here. That's how he'd always enter, whether it was like...
Was he on a submarine during the war?
What was fascinating? He always had this self. He'd read World War I poetry to us when we were like 7 and 8, and
he
weep.
Had a great influence on
and
your
weep.
Life.
He would weep as he read it. Yes, he did. That's where I learned to love World War I poetry.
Yeah,
he told us things that I remember.
Yeah,
things that are deeply front of mind. He took great delight when we were 6 and 7 in English. Uh-huh. He'd just shout out. He'd say, "Lawrence of Arabia."
Yeah.
Was once in a Turkish prison, and was sexually assaulted. By his prison guards.
Yeah.
And that's where he learned to enjoy the pleasures of the flesh.
Uh-huh.
We just like nod.
As a 6 or 7 year old, you could understand that.
But he always used to shout at this, and this is what I thought about when I looked at Kuiper. I heard Mr. Stott's voice. He was a horrible man. He'd shout at us, and this was one great lesson that I carry with me. He'd sometimes just shout out for no reason, "Bullshit baffles brains, lads. Bullshit baffles brains." Kuiper.
Yeah.
Coming from Mr. Stott.
Good one. I'm glad you've discovered Mel Kiper.
Oh,
it was an amazing sporting weekend, Rog.
It was.
It really was vintage. You also had the golf, Rory McIlroy winning the WGC. There was an almost fight in the golf, Rog. Don't know if you saw this. Keegan Bradley and Miguel Angel Jimenez.
Yep.
He's one of my favourite golfers. He's always smoking his big fat cigar and drinking heavily with his big Ginga ponytail. They almost had a fight, an almost fight in golf. Fantastic
take
stuff.
On the Ginga, Dave.
Yeah, it was a great weekend.
Probably in the most important piece of sporting news, though, Dave.
Yeah.
Hockey only vaguely disrupted last night's Men in Blazers.
What? What? Yeah. Jeremy Roenick led us on.
Roenick wasn't on.
Yeah.
Roenick wasn't on, but I imagine him still having the power.
Yeah.
Sitting from his couch somewhere. In Connecticut, I imagine him on his couch, just saying, "Yeah, let them on now."
You don't think
after the post show has gone on for about 57 minutes.
You don't
minutes.
Think that the fact that he wasn't on is behind us getting on, pretty much.
I don't pretend to understand how it works. I do find the clash between the way hockey is presented and the way the English Premier League is presented fascinating. Yeah. I don't pretend to understand it, but a lot of you have emailed us to say how delighted you were last week to tape the Men in Blazers show 5 times and to get 4.5 hours of hockey on your DVRs. And we want to thank GFOP Alex Verde, who started a wonderful petition. It's on our Instagram.
Yeah.
We popped it up, a beautiful petition on petitions.whitehouse.gov.
Yeah.
It's President Obama's petition website. And he wrote,
"We petition the Obama administration to Make NBC run Men in Blazers on time, regardless of whether hockey runs late. The show is already dangerously suboptimal. Oh, thank you so much.
Oh, it's a beautiful, beautiful thing to do. I love that underneath, he's got a long petition that uses the word suboptimal 11 times in about 100 words. It says, signatures needed by June 1st, 2015 to reach goal of 100,000, which I guess is when you trigger President Obama to action on the issue. Uh-huh. It says, 99,999, which is my favourite part of the thing.
That's perfect.
Oh, we did it. We had a lovely time on the show this week. Noel Gallagher.
Oh.
Ex of Oasis and the...
High-flying birds.
The high-flying... I wonder if ravens would count.
I don't know how high they fly. They're always coming from low when they come to the crap part.
Loved every second of having him here.
The only thing I was disappointed by, a little disappointed...
Go on.
Is that a lot of people ask me, how was he off camera? Was he, like, really rude? Was he really, like, difficult? Was he like a rock star? So, no, he was kind of nice. He was really friendly.
He's the loveliest bloke.
Yeah.
I'd actually met him before. I didn't tell him this. Uh-huh. But when he was in DC in 1994, Definitely Maybe came out. Same year as the US World Cup. But Both Feel Like Yesterday. And that album still sounds good. Shortly afterwards, I was living in DC. And Oasis toured DC. They were playing the Black Cat. Wonderful venue. Not a huge venue. And we ran into them, me and my mate Jamie, Big Jamie. We ran into them in Urban Outfitters. Jamie was trying a pair of jeans and he came out of the dressing room. And I guess they were bored, life on tour, not what it's cracked up to be. And Liam just walked up to Jamie, who had on odd socks. One was orange and the other one was stripy red and blue. And he goes, "Nice socks, mate." And we got chatting to them then and there. They gave us tickets for the gig that night.
Sometimes when you talk about your life in DC, you've lived in Chicago.
Yeah, I love Chicago.
Lived in DC,
I love
lived Chicago. In New York, you lived in...
Rogers Park.
Lived in Liverpool.
Home.
But I kind of feel like you had so much life in DC. Because very often you tell a lot of stories about DC.
I was doing wet work.
Yeah, exactly.
So it was a busy time.
The dog barks at midnight.
By the way, producer JW still lives and dies with Oasis. Still, to this day.
Yeah.
I've got to say, watching him pose with Noel Gallagher post-show, Noel, when he found out JW was a fan, went nose-to-nose with JW.
He did behave a little like a rock star.
Like a boxer.
When he found out that somebody loved him.
Yeah, he did. The beam of adoration on JW's face as a wet patch slowly emerged from the front of his denims.
Yeah.
It's one of the highlights of my last week.
Yeah, we've certainly never seen it before.
I loved it. We've got to buy him some new pants.
Ipswich, by the way, we've got to say congratulations to JW. Ipswich. Lost to Blackburn, scraped through into the playoffs. We could be seeing them in the Premier League next season, Rog.
So. I hope so. We'll talk about that in the middle of the show. The other highlight from a sporting perspective, and we'll talk about this on another pod, finishing the work finally on our Mitchell & Ness Men in Blazers Women's World Cup, the big one, collaboration.
Come on, you ladies.
Which is going to launch next week. I've been sewing and sewing and sewing. I've been sewing every 3 hour I've got. Yeah. I'm almost done.
I know.
Bat breaking.
Terrible calluses on your fingers. Rog from the sewing. Okay, we've got a packed show. We're going to crown Chelsea Premier League champions for the 17th time this season. We probe the table's nether regions, Rog, including a Newcastle performance and subsequent news conference that saw John Carver eviscerate his team for lack of effort. And we welcome to the pod the star of the new film, Ex Machina.
Ex Machina.
That's what you might pronounce it.
Liverpool.
And Aston Villa fan, Donald Gleeson.
We've never had a Gingy Villa fan on before.
Wow.
Quite excited.
That's amazing.
Rumoured to be Luke's son in Star Wars, which I find hard to believe because I can't imagine Luke having a birth in a Gingy.
Yeah. I just watched the original Star Wars just this past weekend.
Maybe Luke and Chewbacca have a baby.
That would be a good looking baby.
Gingy baby.
Yeah. Oh. Have you watched Star Wars recently?
I was off on a fan fiction tangent about Luke and Chewbacca's forbidden love. Have I watched it recently?
Yeah, the original Star Wars.
I have not.
It doesn't hold up that well.
None of that. I told you I've been watching with my kids the important movies in my youth.
Yeah.
We just watched Bachelor Party. Not quite as funny as I remember it.
That's so classic. So classic. Okay, Rog, to the football. Let's crack open the Guinness.
Oh,
cheers, Rog.
Cheers to Felipe Luis.
Absolutely.
By the way, the hardest part of the weekend, David, was deciding which dull game to watch at 10 o'clock in the morning this Saturday.
Yeah, it was
tough. This turned out to be a weekend of red cards, save penalties, and all of the excitement languishing at the bottom of the table.
So many penalties, Rog. But we're now 35/38 of the way through the Premier League season. It was a weekend akin to finishing Moby Dick, Rog. Everyone's already told you how it will end, but now you have the satisfaction of seeing it for yourself. Chelsea 1, Crystal Palace 0.
It's not a boring book, though, Moby Dick.
Party time at Stamford Bridge. Party time at Stamford Bridge. Party time at Stamford Bridge. PFA Player of the Year Eden Hazard misses from the penalty spot, but heads home. I think it was just a rebound, Rog. His own rebound to give Mourinho's men a lead they wouldn't relinquish. Chelsea ensure the Premier League title returns to West London after a five-year drought.
Yeah, 35 weeks. Yeah. This Premier League fight has been stopped. The referee steps in.
Yeah.
No mass. Cry the contenders. Jose Mourinho's side led from the front for, what is it, 247 days, David?
Yeah, I think by the end of this season, by the end of this season, they will have broken the record for leading from the front.
It's the closest the Premier League can come to a team going wire to wire. What an achievement. But we have to say, not a lot of suspense about this one.
No, very little. Very, very little. Having said that, I think you've got a lot of people, a lot of critics, obviously, of Chelsea and the style of play. And a lot of people saying, oh, you know what? Like, yeah, they had a great start. But ever since the great start, like, Arsenal have had a better record, or Liverpool have, you know, for a while, hadn't lost a game this year. But in fact, Chelsea established a 13-point lead early in the season, and it's barely been pegged back at all, even after Chelsea lost to Newcastle, lost to Tottenham on New Year's Day. Leading from the front, not only having that great start was hard, but just leading from the front, two losses all season. Rog, just the will to keep on winning these games. And they're not hammering sides. They're just winning close game after close game after close game. And after a while, that isn't luck. That isn't boring, boring Chelsea. That is a way of winning. That is a team mentality. And I think you could see by the end of this game that these players are incredibly bonded to each other and incredibly bonded under a system that they are willing to play for their manager.
11 best friends. Yeah. I mean, in this game,
they outpassioned them.
Robust start for Palace, who are all physicality and Zahanas. They ran at Chelsea, who appeared initially content to stalk their prey on the break. There was a brief moment of excitement around the possible penalty shout not given to Palace against a diving John Terry on the typical last-ditch block. Struck his hand from close range, a call you will never get in a game like this against JT, captain, leader, legend, with the title on the line. But then Chelsea got their requisite penalty.
Yeah, definitely. Eden Hazard breaking in from the left, fouled by MacArthur and I think Mariappa from behind.
It was like he'd flicked on his dazzling switch suddenly.
Yeah, it's what he does, dazzle switch. Set lasers to dazzle.
And he just accelerated at speed. The Palace defence completely panicked. He drew the foul. And then he stood over that penalty, hand on hips, low-slung Belgian buttocks, almost grazing the turf.
Yeah, 9 of 9 in the Premier League.
Insert rule of thumb, the more commentators talk about how unstoppable a player is at penalty kicks, Davo.
Yeah, the more likely they are to miss it. But I think it was intentional, Rog. He just knocked it right into the keeper's legs. It just came up at a perfect height. Yeah. For him, for the small, to just nod it. And it's a very good header, actually.
When Blake Griffin does that in an NBA slam dunk contest, you know, whams it off the backboard and then power dunks it, he gets a lot of credit. Mm-hmm. I mean, Hazard has netted 9 penalties.
Yeah.
This was his 10th. Yeah. And I think this was one he'd been training. He uses the keeper like a backboard and then nips in for the angled drive. I'll say, as a goalkeeper, speaking to the goalkeepers last month for the Goalkeepers Union, they said there's nothing more frustrating for a goalkeeper than saving a penalty and then having it go in on the rebound, the defender's just not getting there first. I think it should only count as half a goal.
Yeah.
But even if it was just half a goal, David, the game was over.
I know, half a goal. That's all Chelsea needed was half a goal. I just loved Jose Mourinho's tactical decisions he made in this game. Half-time, he pulls.
He ended the Juan Cuadrado era at Stamford Bridge.
I know, not too soon either. Pulls off Cuadrado, puts on Mikel.
Chelsea ended the game with 6 defenders, 2 defensive midfielders, and 1 Didier Drogba. It was almost,
a central defender.
It was almost Mourinho's signal. He does not care what people think about him.
Yeah.
Chelsea will, if he wants, win the title by huffing and puffing and sitting deeper and deeper against Crystal Palace, a team with nothing in the world to play for. There was one beautiful moment, I think, in the 81st minute. Drogba had a nostalgic whiff at the ball.
Yeah.
What better way? What better way for the Stamford Bridge faithful to win and celebrate that title than a Drogba stunner?
But he actually just knocked it
sliced it.
With his right foot, into his left foot, back onto his right foot, and whiffed it straight past the left-hand post. It was a... I love a crap goal, Rog, but that was almost the crappiest goal of all time.
Yeah, he had this little sad look on his face, like, must call agent to make move to MLS very soon.
Could happen.
So it's not Drogba's team anymore. Say. It's not Cech's team anymore. Yeah. But, you know, you've got to look at Hazard. This was his 49th goal in his 3 years at Chelsea. Yeah. He's also notched 46 assists.
Yeah.
He's 24, David.
Yeah,
he's a player who's only going to get better and better. And by the way, about that penalty, the thing I loved and I talked about on the show was his celebration where he rubbed his brow twice. For a second, he showed that the pressure and the relief even a player of his caliber experiences when put on the spot under pressure in this game at this point of the season. It was a very beautiful moment of emotional vulnerability. The only real question in the second half, though, Davo, was why does, you'll tell me this, why does Roman Abramovich, his business card says oligarch, petrodollar fuel billionaire, why does he insist on dressing like a homeless bloke?
Well, he seems to give zero ducks as well. That seems to be what
Is he trying to make?
That seems to bind him and Jose Mourinho together. That he's so wealthy and so powerful, it doesn't even matter what he looks like.
Is he trying to show that there's just a point where you can be so rich that you can just... Or is it a Russian midlife crisis spiraling before us?
He's not a vain man. I think we can safely say that he's not a man, you know, drawn by vanity, Rog.
One question I got for you, right? Serious one about Abramovich. When the camera focuses on him, as it does at least twice a game, what's the first thing that goes into your mind? What do you think of when you see Roman Abramovich smiling, slightly menacing, slash eerily, down at your beloved team at Stamford
Bridge? I see one thing and I hear another. I see death and I hear money.
What do you smell?
Fear.
Yeah, fair. I mean, I've got to tell you, this has never dulled. How many years has he owned Chelsea?
12 years, I think, since 2003.
Yeah, well, it's a long time, Davo. But no matter how often he's shown on television, the second they flash him up, the first thing that goes through my mind is, how many people has that man made disappear? I don't think about that sometimes. It's my gut reaction every time.
Yeah.
I mean, to be an oligarch, it means you've done some dark, dark crap. You've seen terrible things. Mm-hmm. I always scrunch my eyes at the television like that. To look really closely to see if there's any blood under his fingernails.
Yeah. He's also probably worked hard. He's had some pretty tough times himself. He's been in jail himself and ends up making his billions in Russia, in the new Russia, Rog. Interesting thing for me about Abramovich now is how engaged he is at Chelsea. He's been at Chelsea more this season than we've seen in the past few years.
Looks like he sleeps there.
He was there at the youth game. They were...
I think he sleeps there.
I think he's sleeping
under the seats.
But what does he want for Chelsea now? This is the big question, because I think there were three key games for Chelsea this season. I think when they beat Arsenal back in October, the amazing almost fight, I think that was a huge win in hindsight this season. I think secondly, the New Year's defeat to Tottenham, which could easily have sent them into a spiral. It didn't.
A spiral
of doom.
They
rebounded. They are unbeaten since that game. And the third key game was the loss to Paris Saint-Germain in the Champions League. Had Chelsea been in the Champions League at the end of this season, they would have been playing Barcelona, sandwiched between those crucial games against Arsenal and Man United. I'm not quite sure that we would be crowning Chelsea as champions right now, and I have a feeling that the race would still be very, very tight. The reality is, if Chelsea are going to contend for a Champions League, they're going to really have to spend in the off-season. They're going to have to bring in a lot of players. And all the evidence seems, certainly based on the success of their net transfer market spending, that they're going to spend a lot of money in the off-season.
Oh, I'll tell you what Mourinho wants. He wants some atmosphere at Stamford Bridge. He spent much of the second half. The Palace fans started to sing, Mourinho's right, your fans are...
crap.
Suboptimal. Something that rhymes with right.
Yeah.
Mourinho nodded in approval, turned towards the Chelsea fans in the Matthew Harding stand, shook his head in sadness, and mouthed the word nothing. He then, while the game was still going on, gave Alan Pardew a kiss, which was his way, like the Godfather Fredo scene, I know it was you, Fredo, you broke my heart. It was his way of saying that it was over. The game was over, even while it was going on around him. At the final whistle, he put his thumbs up and mouthed, top fans, don't know if that's ironic, before miming sleeping, and then he disappeared.
Yeah.
The players celebrating, doing those kind of unchoreographed jump up and down dances, that triumphant dance is worse than the attendees at a 30th year high school reunion. Footballers ritually do. But Mourinho took himself out, Davey. He's a genius. He realises, he's a man who realises if he's not in the post-match lap of honour, he'll make himself the story by not being there rather than by kind of doing what everyone else is doing, jumping on Didier Drogba's back as if he's Hodor, doing the up and down army, jumping up and down, you think. He's a media maestro.
Yeah, he's very good at doing it. He's definitely right about the atmosphere at Stamford Bridge a lot this season. I've been there three or four times, and it is very, very quiet, certainly in the stands behind Jose Mourinho. Those are the expensive seats right there and opposite him. The Chelsea fans, the real faithful, are down at the ends. They used to be in the Shed End. The Shed End is now where the visiting fans go. They put them all there. And in the other end, the stand by the North End Road, that's where the loud fans. So I don't think he was insulting the Chelsea faithful. I think he was insulting the Chelsea expensive seats.
Let me ask you this, Dave. 5-year drought over, fifth title for Chelsea, fourth in the Premier League, third under Jose Mourinho.
Yeah.
In 10 years' time, 20 years' time, when you look back with Chelsea fans at this season, nostalgically, what will you remember? What will you think fondly of? Like Arsenal fans remember the Invincibles, remember moments of that season, remember the players that thrilled them. Liverpool fans even further remember back their title wins with great delight, pleasure, moments of memory.
Good question. I think that it is a... I won't remember winning the Capital One Cup. I couldn't even remember till somebody reminded me that we beat Tottenham in the final of the Capital One Cup. I think that the emergence of Matic, I think for me, has been the key thing. And that's what not a lot of people talk about. Hazard is obviously a spectacular player. Fabregas coming to the club certainly early in the season made a huge difference. Costa having a real goal scorer. But I think Matic is the player who's going to hold this team together for a long time. And I think you could look at the spine of this team, Courtois. I think Zouma is going to be a spectacularly good player. I think Matic right there. I think that Matic will be the player that will last and can stay. He's another young player. He can stay at Stamford Bridge for a very, very long time and play that role.
I think you'll remember a whiff of Hazard.
Yeah.
I think there'll also be a memory of Courtois. I think you'll giggle about Cesc and Diego Costa.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's two things I'm guessing that will stand the test of time. One is John Terry's last stand. I mean, watching Terry be covered in a coat of champagne, Bukkake style, in the locker room was definitely my highlight of a very unsuspenseful match day. As much as Terry is the butt of hatred, Chelsea Football Club have won 25 major honours and John Terry has been present for 16 of those. The other, though, Dave, above all the other players, the one thing you'll remember is Mourinho, Mourinho, Mourinho. This was a pragmatic, collective, disciplined campaign. Bar the Spurs game, this team found a way to get it done. I mean, Cesc said after the game, he said, and this was fascinating, Cesc, who's played with Pep Guardiola, obviously came through under Arsene Wenger, he made a point of saying, Jose Mourinho, the best manager I ever played with, he just loves winning. I'm not saying other managers I played for don't, but he has some edge that goes above any other manager I've ever played with. And Jose Mourinho, still probably incredibly hurt by this boring, boring debate. What a quote, Davo. He said to the reporters after the game, he said, in my country, we say the dogs bark and the caravan goes by. What do you make of it all?
That's interesting. I mean, your point against Terry is very good. Terry's had a remarkable season. I think you've got to put a lot of that down to Jose Mourinho. These have been two remarkable second acts. Jose Mourinho is the first manager I can think of who's come back into a league. There must be an American equivalent, a coach who's come back to the same team and has ended up going and having glory. Certainly hasn't happened in the Premier League before. John Terry, the re-emergence of him. I mean, we were making jokes about John Terry, him being done, his legs are done. He's had arguably his best season in the Premier League ever at the age of 74. But it's partly because how Mourinho's adjusted and made that team play. He's put Matic in front of them. He's cut the space between the defence and midfield, got rid of that high line, and he's just got an amazing performance out of him. Let Terry really be the leader on the park and built a team around John Terry that is just made for working with that man.
I mean, your point about second acts is really well taken. I interviewed Jose Mourinho just after he'd taken the job. And we forget that he came back to the English Premier League. It's so tough to win it. And he came out with a stink of having been rejected by Real Madrid and Cristiano Ronaldo. I interviewed him and he made a point in the interview about, I mean, it was a very spiteful interview. He made a point going way out of his way in the interview just to tell a story about Brazilian Ronaldo just so he could say in front of cameras, he's the real Ronaldo. I mean, all he wanted to do was settle scores with Real Madrid, with Cristiano Ronaldo. In those days, it was his little horses, and failure with his little horses, Davo, could have tarnished his legacy. Instead, he cemented it. It's his eighth top flight league title, 3 in the Premier League, 2 in the Serie A, 2 in the Portuguese League, and 1 in La Liga with Real Madrid. And next week, you'll have the delight of watching Liverpool offer Chelsea an honour guard before they come on the field, David.
Okay, Rog, now to the real excitement of the Premier League. Leicester 3, Newcastle 0. The great escape continues. Leicester get their 5th win in the last 6 games behind 2 goals from Leonardo Ochoa and 1 from Wes Morgan after Newcastle's 8th straight loss, Rog. Manager John Carver, it was an incredible news conference, questioned his players' commitment in an incendiary fashion in front of the media.
Yep. I mean, that bookended another incendiary news conference that preceded the game by Nigel Pearson.
Wow.
Who I just fall deep and deep in love with.
We can't lose him from the Premier League.
The man who told the supporter to F off and die.
Yeah.
Strangled Crystal Palace midfielder James McArthur in-game.
Yeah.
Told the journalist that he didn't tell him to piss off. He told him to piss off.
Piss off.
Like that.
Yeah.
Well, this piss
I'm
off.
I'm going to break your neck.
Yeah. There's men. There's piss off. And then there's
piss off.
Yeah. And then they just had one uncomfortable set of interviews last week with journalists after another. The famous one, beautiful one, look at it on YouTube, especially if you love the
Nigel Pearson ostrich.
If you like the comedic work of Ricky Gervais, watch it.
Yeah.
It includes lines, can you put your head in the sand?
Uh-huh.
Are you flexible enough? And then he got lost in the moment. I am. I can.
Yeah.
You can't. I mean, he just lost himself in this image that he was conjuring. I mean, Pearson, he really seems to be a man who cannot help himself. And I love it in the same way as I love Bill Belichick. And frankly, I've got to say this. I would love to see Nigel Pearson interviewed one-on-one by Max Kellerman.
Yeah. I would also like to see...
Rightfully got huge crap for the way he got in Manny Pacquiao's face on Saturday night. I would watch that interview on pay-per-view. Kellerman, Pearson, there'll only be one winner.
I would like Nigel Pearson in treatment. In treatment.
I can.
That
you
would be amazing. Nigel Pearson in treatment. Tell me about your relationship with your father, Nigel. That would be fascinating, fascinating stuff. The game, though,
that would be dark, incredibly dark.
It would
dark.
Be amazing.
It would be
amazing.
It would read
stuff.
That as if Charles Bukowski wrote it, is all I can tell you.
What do you think of when I say the word ostrich?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I can. You can't.
Thank God for Pearson.
Yeah.
They were playing Newcastle.
Oh, my word.
So Newcastle's last points came on February the 28th.
Yeah. This is a team that beat the champions Chelsea this year, Rog.
They were 17 points ahead of Leicester when they won their last point, David.
Mm-hmm.
And now they are a team. And when we say free-fall, we're probably underselling exactly what they were. This was a game that's appeared as if it was sponsored by... But it got worse
by
for
the
Newcastle.
Phrase, it would get worse for Newcastle.
Because we expected it would be a tough game for them.
Yeah.
And we'll have to say their defensive stand lasted longer than anyone predicted.
36 seconds.
Yeah. Ochoa netted off a corner. If Stevie Gerrard was watching the game, I'd love to have watched it with him. I bet you when that ball went in, he turned around and went, damn mate, that was fast.
That was fast.
That was bloody quick. I mean, the rest of the game became Leicester goals, Newcastle fouls, and the match directors turning their cameras with, I guess, a reveling kind of sense of delight as they showed tortured, miserable Newcastle fans looking on aghast in the stands. I mean, the whole Men in Blazers show this week could have been 30 minutes of shell-shocked Newcastle fans holding back the tears. The game was just an orgy. Of fans of the week shots, Davey.
Yeah, Wes Morgan got the second, Rog. Then, what did Newcastle do? What do they need to do? They need to regroup, Rog. They need to get into that dressing room. They need to have an inspiring team talk. I'm not sure Carver did it, because as they're going out in the tunnel for the second half...
It must have been Churchillian.
Yeah, Jonas Gutierrez gathers them round. He inspires the lads, and they go right out. And after 3 minutes, they concede again, Rog.
Yeah, I mean, when that third goal went in, all I could picture... was Arlo White's face on point of Arlo-gasm. It must have been. I mean, Leicester were rampant. They were movement, they were confidence, they were flicks, they were feints. But above all, they were tenacity and desire. And Newcastle
were passion them
just assuming the position.
Mm-hmm.
Leicester fans chanted, there's only one Mike Ashley. Newcastle, their tired, poor, huddled masses bellowed, "Get out of our club, you fat bastard. Get out of our club." Such a self-defeating but wonderful protest. Yeah. We've talked about this a lot. It's such a general accusation. Cut to any fat Newcastle fan.
Yeah.
I mean, and you've just got to be less general with you. I think then he'll get the message. As I said on the show last night, it's like saying the Jewish guy with glasses. And what a great moment in the middle of that protest, Davo. They're screaming, bellowing for Mike Ashley to leave. And then Ryan Taylor struck the ball from distance, forcing Schmeichel into a smart save. Does beg the kind of etiquette question. When you're protesting your club and your team score,
Just
stop protesting and cheer. Or is it like, do you boo clap? Do you laugh cry?
Well, I think there are a lot of ethical questions for Newcastle fans, quite frankly. This is a group of fans who essentially got the result they wanted earlier in the season. They got Alan Pardew, not sacked, but they got him to leave the club. Clearly felt unwelcome, clearly took an opportunity.
One of the most successful IPOs of our generation, the sackpardew.com work.
And I think they've got to take some responsibility for the situation that they're in right now. Oh, obviously, they have no responsibility for Mike Ashley, but they got rid of a manager who would have them in a much better place than they are right now.
Oh, I feel terrible for them. I mean, they only seem to have three kinds of faces. Sad, sadder, saddest. You're not fit to wear the shirt. They screamed at their players at the final whistle. And I've got to say again, I'm yet to see a Newcastle fan who actually looks fit enough to wear that shirt. That's a conversation for another
time.
Well,
it's a very tight shirt.
It's an incredibly tight shirt.
Yeah.
As my wife says, when I put on my Everton shirt that I buy, she says it puts on £40 in 20 years, and that's been kind. I mean, they'd watch Mike Williamson kind of WWE dropkick.
That challenge.
It was like full on Muay Thai. John Carver later said he did it on purpose. It was, quote, an easy way out, the most damning thing a manager can say about a player in a relegation zone battle. But just when you think Newcastle...
Not if he had 11 Jack Coolbacks. That'd be fine.
Just when you think Newcastle have hit rock bottom,
They
excavate another circle of hell.
Yeah.
Daryl Yanmat, another foul right on the final whistle.
Another foul on Jamie Vardy. Poor, they don't like Jamie Vardy in Newcastle.
He couldn't believe he got a red because he didn't actually post him into a television camera on that one. But since the start of last season, Newcastle have had 13 Premier League red cards, two more than any other club. They're now on their longest losing streak since 1977. And in a bizarre ranting, there was just a desperate bellow from his subconscious emotions, John Carver said, on a scale of 1 to 10, it's a minus 10. And then he muttered about how the team needed, as you say, 11 Jack Coolbacks, and how the rest of the team hid behind a post. It wasn't a manager's press conference, Dave. It was like watching fan TV.
It was fan TV. That's why we loved it so much, Rog.
At the Gunner Luke tweeted in to say, is it fair to say John Carver's more crap at his job than stormtroopers shooting at Jedi? I'd say, yeah. I mean, John Carver, currently under more pressure than Mel Kiper's bladder on draft day, expected to be fired. And that's what is so bizarre about this Newcastle thing at the end of the day, Dave. What do you do to shake things up, to shatter the malaise? At Newcastle, you issue a press release, say you've had frank dialogue with the players and the manager, and then you carry on.
That doesn't seem to be enough. Right now, Rog, five teams within 2 points, just fighting to avoid being... Well, one sort of assumes that Burnley and QPR are going down, Rog. And five teams between 2 points trying to avoid being the third team to join them. I got to tell you, I think it looks dark for Newcastle. I think you feel a little bit more positive about it than I do, but I think it looks dark for them.
Yeah, well, they're playing West Bromwich Albion, a team who have nothing to play for. QPR, a team who will probably have been relegated already. And West Ham, who have a bit of previous with Sam Allardyce wanting to get back, possibly at Newcastle, but they too should be on their vacation. At Pirate Mike 666, if Newcastle get relegated from the position they were in, it will be the most heartbreaking sports event since the demise of NFL Europe. A Newcastle priest has published a prayer asking for owner Mike Ashley to sell the team. The priest, Stephen Foster. It's a beautiful prayer, David. Would you read it for us?
Yeah, I'd love to. If you spend your hard-earned money on a match ticket, it's an insult to witness passionless, mercenary football. Our family is Newcastle. Give us what we want. But if he is not prepared to change, Heavenly Father, give him the insight to know it's time to go. Give us a new owner or a new mentality for the present owner who will take our spirit and not crush it, but revive it. Give us someone who will not rename our stadium from St. James's Park, not change the colour of our strip, not rebrand us into something we are not. More on this in our other podcast, Rog, Modern Theology Today.
Amen.
Yeah, it's interesting. Who's going to want to go and buy that club, though, when people call? Somebody's going to have to... Nobody who's, like, eaten a bit too much over the last few years, Rog, they don't want to be called a fat bastard. Who's going to want to come and manage them and deal with the IPO power of sackpardew.com? Is this going to be very, very tough?
I think the sackpardew.com comes from passion. It's a city of passion. That stadium is built in the center of the city.
Yeah.
They are absolutely mad for it. I'd imagine a very skinny, tofu-loving American.
Yeah, it'll have to be.
Stepping in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
Yeah. With big ghoulies, Rog. Okay. Villa 3, Everton 2. After last week's heartbreaking defeat at the Etihad, Tim Sherwood's team rebounds at Villa Park. Two goals from Christian Benteke and one from Tom Cleverley keep Villa 2 points clear of the drop zone.
I was looking forward to this, David.
Really?
Should have been the Battle of the Balds. Yeah. Guzan versus Howard.
Yeah.
Should have been on pay-per-view. But then out of nowhere, Guzan was dropped.
Oh.
And we saw sad Guzan on the bench.
Oh.
He'd started 108 straight Premier League games, Brad. It's the longest active Premier League streak. And instead, we watched a game in which Everton really didn't care. 3-0 against United last week. Job done. This is a team that are on their vacation, content to let Fabian Delph excel and outplay everyone on the pitch. And Zogbia buzzed around with menace. He sandwiched it towards Benteke, who posterised poor Leighton Baines, nodded past Howard for his 10th goal in his last 8 games, having gone goalless in the 10 games before that. That, Davo, is the Tim Sherwood effect.
Mm-hmm.
And then Everton's lack of interest showcased during Benteke's second goal from a corner in which Gareth Barry and John Stones wrestled each other, allowing the most deadly striker on the pitch to prod home unmarked. I've got to say, Everton's lack of substitution suggests Roberto couldn't really care less about the result. They will play out the rest of the season with all the rigorous fastidiousness of Stephen A. Smith's journalism.
Hmm. Wow. Stephen A. Smith, not Stephen Naismith's journalism.
Stephen Naismith is actually a very good writer.
Oh.
Very good investigative reporter.
Stephen
Just
A.
chose
Smith.
To be a footballer.
He's a goal poacher. Sunderland 2, Southampton 1. Two Jordi Gomez penalties lift the Black Cats.
I would love to see Stephen A. Smith interview Stephen Naismith.
I'll tell him. Can we do that?
That would be like... That
can
would
we
be,
do that?
That would be Star Wars. That would be like entering a Star Wars.
That would be awesome. Stephen A. Smith on Stephen A. Smith. Which one's which? Two Jordi Gomez penalties, Rog, lift the Black Cats to victory and even more surprisingly, keep fans in their seats at the Stadium of Light for an entire 90 minutes. Despite the win, Sunderland remain in 18th place, 1 point from safety.
Oh, what a game. The Dutch manager derby.
Yeah.
It was a game of first for Southampton, but not in a good way. They hadn't conceded a penalty in the Premier League all season.
Yeah.
They gave two away in this one.
Ruh-roh.
They hadn't had a red card all season.
Ruh-roh.
They did in this one. Stand up, James Ward-Prowse.
Hello.
Yeah.
I'm James Ward-Prowse.
I did love Dick Advocaat. And if I was a Sunderland fan, they are currently in the relegation zone. They do have a game in hand on those around them. And Dick Advocaat asked after the game if he felt there was, quote, enough in the dressing room to get the club out of trouble. He smiled and said, yes, definitely, I'm there. And then added good. Quickly, and 18 players.
Yeah.
I thought it was great.
Very, very good. This is the Monday game, Rog. Hull City 1, Arsenal 3. Not even a header from our favourite diminutive Irish Ginge. Stephen Quinn can save Steve Bruce's men. Hull now just 1 point from sinking into the relegation zone. Arsenal, meanwhile, in third, trailing City on goal difference with a game in hand, Rog, for that second place trophy.
Yeah. Michael Kerry, my Arsenal supporter mate, tells me.
Whose team are we now?
He's like, we are the little team that can.
Really?
Yeah, that's how he's recast.
I think they should have won the Premier League.
Underachieving Arsenal team. 9 wins in 10 games unbeaten. 2 deflections, 2 goals to knock Hull onto their back. A third from Alexis Sanchez after a visionary pass from Aaron Ramsey. His 24th goal for Sanchez in his first season in England. Unbelievable tally, Dave. I was trying to think today of Premier League first seasons.
Yeah.
This one, it ranks up with the best. It really does. Unbelievably hard to adjust to the Premier League. The last player to do so instantly was Kun Aguero this, Davo.
But I was thinking of him.
This, to me, ranks up there with Ruud van Nistelrooy's 23 goals in 2001. Fernando Torres, 24 goals in his happy place of 2007. And Jurgen Klinsmann's 20 goals and 10 assists when he broke through with Spurs in 1994.
Even more impressive, coming off a World Cup year, Rog. Alexis Sanchez came right out of a World Cup. Very hard to do it out of a World Cup.
Yep, so true, fella. I mean, he was overshadowed in the game by Stephen Quinn.
Yep.
Who
naturally
took time off the crock of gold at the end of the rainbow to net a consolation goal for Hull and steal all the headlines. But Hull now, Dave, we're rooting for Steve Bruce. We love we love pie men.
Yeah. The international pie industry are rooting for Steve Bruce. Right?
Yeah, he's a man now for whom dark clouds have again sullied the skies over Hull. Got a massive game this weekend against Burnley. Mm-hmm. They then face Spurs and Manchester United. Steve Bruce's former team as a player on the final day. For Arsenal fans, you don't need me to tell you this, but this win ushered in St. Totteringham's day. The day when Spurs are no longer mathematically able to finish above Arsenal. Remarkably, and this is remarkable, this is Arsenal fans' 20th straight year of rival beating.
Oh, my word. Liverpool 2, Queen's Park Raisins 1, Rog. 8 minutes after seeing Rob Green save his penalty. Oh, that was a tragic moment. Stevie G heads home a corner to sink the Raisins in his penultimate game at Anfield. Liverpool now 4 points behind United for the final top four spot, Rog. The Raisins, meanwhile, could be down if they lose this. Well, they will be down if they lose this upcoming weekend.
Let down. I mean, what a surreal emotional roller coaster of a game. Yeah. We've got to talk about before the game. The Rodgers out.
Rodgers out. Rafa in.
Banner that was pulled by a plane, paid for allegedly by Liverpool fans. I would imagine Liverpool fans, probably of the Manchester United variety, who paid for it. I mean, what did you make of it? Rodgers out, Rafa in. My instinct was, I hope it was paid for by Rafael Palmeiro.
Yeah.
I'd love to see the former Oriel legend given the reins at Liverpool. He's been biting for that job.
Well, it's been that strange roller coaster of a season at Liverpool where they started so badly after last year's promising campaign. That ultimately very disappointing campaign, but played some beautiful football last season. You know, this season got off to a terrible start. And then suddenly, while none of us were really watching, while we were trying to figure out what Liverpool were doing, they suddenly went on that amazing winning streak. And suddenly, Rodgers is a genius. And now they seem to have reverted back to a lot of the problems they had at the beginning of the season. I think very, very similar to non-Liverpool fans and non-Liverpool observers who don't know quite what to make of Brendan Rodgers. I think a large proportion of Liverpool fans don't quite know what to make of him.
After the game, he attempted to snigger, "Modern football now is very harsh. It's very much short-termism." But I've got to say, to me, he is, as you say, the victim of his own persistence in making himself the story whenever something good happens. I mean, he makes sure that everybody knows he did it. Do you remember, early in the season, Mario Balotelli had like his one robust performance?
Yeah.
And Brendan Rodgers insisted on telling the press,
"I've got him defending at corners."
Yeah, he said to me, "I don't defend at corners." I say, "You do now." When you behave like that, you live by the media in England. You always die by the media. Anyway, Brendan wasn't the story despite the play because this was all about Stevie G.
Stevie G.
Stevie G's not his birthday.
Yeah.
But the end is nigh. And this was a very... Premier League writers, hats off.
Yeah.
Premier League. I mean, it was very much like the year Dan Hazard narrative, the missed penalty, Hazard's bounced back to him and he nutted it in. It took Gerrard a couple of excruciating minutes more before he got his goal, but QPR dragged themselves back into the game through a Leroy Fer goal, neutralising Philippe Coutinho doing his magic-y thing. And then we've got to say there was a penalty, 12 minutes to go, setting up Steven Gerrard with a chance to be the hero. What happened, David?
Oh, my word. It's like his legs, Rog, have... This is a man with the legs of a 75-year-old at this point. They barely seem to be able to plant in the ground, let alone accelerate towards the ball. And the most I've never seen a player miss a penalty and look more disappointing. Even in sort of World Cup penalty shootouts, I've never seen anybody look so heartbroken.
Oh, he looked down at the turf in anguish. And at that moment, Dave, he seemed sadder than a piece of First World War poetry read by Johnny Cash.
Yeah.
But we joked about it too early. Just when you thought Stevie G was saving himself for the LA Galaxy.
Oh, the writers have got another idea.
With 3 minutes to go, what happened?
Glancing header, Rog. A vintage glancing header.
In front of the cop.
Yeah.
His 184th goal for Liverpool Football Club. Fifth on the Reds' all-time goal scorer chart. And then he was substituted by Brendan. And he trudged off stoically with the face of a man who expects his time in LA to be... about as enjoyable as that Red Hot Chili Peppers song Under the Bridge.
Yeah.
Sometimes I feel like I don't have a partner. Sometimes I feel like my only friend is the city I live in, the city of angels. Lonely as I am, together we cry.
I can't wait to see where Stevie G lives. Do you think he's going to go to Bel Air?
I think the only part of LA he's heard about is through Ice Cube, South Central.
Yeah. Inglewood.
Pretty close to.
Yeah.
Pretty close to the galaxy.
Down to Carson. Down to Carson.
You've seen all Ice Cube's movies.
Yeah.
At Tyler Harris 91 wrote, F. Scott Fitzgerald may as well have been right about Stevie G when he said Gatsby believed in the green light, the orgiastic future. Year by year recedes before us. It eluded us then, but that's no matter. Tomorrow we'll run further, faster, stretch out our arms farther, and one fine morning. So we beat on, boats against the current, borne back ceaselessly into the past. It's beautiful, Davey. More beautiful than Roger's post-game tribute to Stevie G.
Yeah.
Which rang more like an early excuse for a slow start to Liverpool's next season.
Uh-huh.
He said, in terms of sheer quality, as a football player, there's not many in our team who can rival Steven. We've got a great bunch of boys who are honest. They're finding their feet. It will probably only be when he's gone that people recognise what sheer talent he has. Stay for another season, Stevie G.
Oh. Yeah, that would make MLS delighted. West Ham 1, Burnley 0, Rog. The Clarets were reduced to 10 men after just 23 minutes when Jonathan Moss sent off Michael Duff for tripping Kiata inside the box. Mark Noble converted the ensuing penalty, Rog. Burnley has to win all three of their remaining games to have a chance at survival.
Oh, poor, poor Burnley.
Yeah.
I mean, again, triple jeopardy. The foul, definitely a foul by Duff.
Yeah.
Clumsy. But it was definitely not a preventing a goal-scoring opportunity. And penalty, goal down, reduced to 10
opportunity
men.
Opportunity is a difficult word, Roger. It's very broad.
Yeah, but it was against West Ham.
There's a goal-scoring opportunity the moment you, like, walk onto the pitch.
Whatever it was, they were instantly dead and buried. Burnley have won once since January, oddly against Manchester City.
Yeah.
Sean Dyche ruminated at the end of the game. If we could do this season over again, he was asked, what would you do differently? He'd say, I would have got the checkbook out.
Yeah.
Burnley's wage bill is half that of the next lowest spending team. I guess their failure to bring in a single player in January is haunting them. They've had just one goal in the last nine games. And you compare them, David, to Queen's Park Raisins.
Yeah.
Where rarely has so much money been spunked on a club with so little to show for it.
Yeah, £70,000 a week to Joey Barton, Rog.
They've got a bloated wage bill in comparison to everyone. A managerial carousel, so little in the way of cohesive strategy. It's just two completely different teams who appear to be plunging. But for QPR, Charlie Austin moving to another club may be the only ripple on the surface when they go under.
Yeah. Manchester United 0, West Brom 1, Rog. What an extraordinary result. A game that really mattered as well. West Brom reaches the 40-point mark after Chris Brunt's free kick deflects off Jonas Olsen and past David De Gea. It's United's third loss on the trot. I know we're going to talk about United. We should say congratulations to West Bromwich Albion. Got to the 40-point mark. They've saved themselves from relegation. This was a club that was in crisis earlier in the season. They've just done very, very well. Another big scout for them.
Tony Pulis's first victory against United in the Premier League, I think in 11 attempts. This is another game in which we asked which United, like you were saying, which Liverpool would turn up. Is it the valiant Charlie is a red-inspired team who overcame Tottenham, Liverpool and City, or the damp squibbers who were smothered by Chelsea and blown out by shoddy footballing's Everton Football Club, Davey?
Yeah.
I mean, we got to see very quickly. By the way, I was just excited to watch this to find out how, as at Paperwork Ninja tweeted, how would Louis van Gaal call West Bromwich? I hope he calls them Wet Sandwich Albatross.
Yeah, that was good. Yeah, that might be a little bit too close to West Bromwich Albion.
But van Gaal was preoccupied, making tactical changes. Rooney stepped back, in came Robin van Persie back up front. And United stroke the ball around from side to try and find the pace of pass and width to stretch West Brom's determined five men in the midfield. RVP, he could have had a hat-trick in this one, David, in the first 20 minutes, to be honest. But he looked so rusty.
No, I mean, it's this confounding thing. United had all the momentum a couple of weeks ago. Suddenly, this is next season's title challengers. But you've just got to ask yourself, what is the core of this team? Meanwhile, report comes out in midweek. Phil Jones, apparently, Rog, is the best centre-back in Europe. And yet you watch these players on the ball, and certainly without Michael Carrick in the centre of the park, this is a team that looks
devoid of spine, devoid of that killer instinct, and don't seem to really be gelling under Van Gaal.
I mean, to be honest, they had 79.9% possession in this match, which is the most by a side in the Premier League this season. I think the second most since they've been keeping records.
Yeah.
This is just sloppy crossing, terrible finishing, and Boaz Myhill heroically repelling everything that came anywhere near his goal. West Brom, they've had 19 of their 33 goals this season have come from set pieces. Shouldn't have been a surprise when they scored again through the wall. Jonas Olsen looked surprised. I mean, the look on his face when he scored, it was one of Beyonce Givenchy at the Met Ball astonishment. And United had plenty of time to muster an equaliser. Fellaini went ahead up front with Rooney and RVP tucking oddly in behind him. And their best chance came from one of their own set pieces. This was a penalty from RVP, but he Stevie G'd it. Boaz Myhill parrying superbly. You've got to say, David, RVP looking more and more MLS-y. And United have lost three games in a row without scoring for the first time since April 1989.
This is at Old Trafford, Rog. This is at home against West Bromwich Albion. This is just not a... This is not a team that you expect to lose to.
You know, Van Gaal has tried to explain this week about United's flip-flopping in a couple of ways. First of all, United have suffered more injuries than any other team in the Premier League this season. 68 injuries. Chelsea had just 43, he was at pains to point out. And I found this fascinating. After the game, he announced that United's trip to America and the way they toured America over the summer last year, he said it cost us a tilt at the Premier League title. The Air Miles earned while playing games in LA, Denver, Washington, DC, Detroit and Miami, he said, was what gave us our slow start. We're going to do America this season, but differently. We'll have two bases in the US, so there's no flying between matches. We're going to go via bus, which is better. God knows how far they're going to go on the bus. People who take Greyhound regularly will probably beg
to
differ.
I'm not sure that's a great
idea.
But
he said, we started very badly this year. When you cut out that start, we shall equal Chelsea, he promised. We will see. But the moment of the weekend, definitely the chance of Rio, Rio, Rio from the Manchester United faithful at Old Trafford in support of Rio Ferdinand, who lost tragically his young wife this weekend in probably the most human, poignant and wonderful moment of the weekend.
Yeah, it's a beautiful moment during the fifth minute, obviously honouring Rio's former number. Our heart goes out for him. Just a terrible, terrible thing to happen. Three small children. Heartbreaking, Rog. Tottenham 0, Manchester City 1. Spurs killer Sergio Aguero blasted home a David Silva through ball in the 29th minute to move City into second place. Spurs still in sixth place, 7 points off the top four. You've got to think they're heading to the Europa League, Rog.
I think they'd hope not, Davo. Uh-huh. I don't know what Aguero... Spurs bring out seven games, 10 goals against Spurs. This was an amazingly beautiful counter-attacking goal from Joe Hart to David Silva. So much space in front of him. Only danger could result. And the run from Aguero and the exquisite pass into space, the virtuoso finish. It's his 22nd league goal of the season. Spurs, David, they ended with an 11. It was as if Pochettino was putting together an EA Sports FIFA foot team of their most disappointing players ever. Included Fazio, Lamela, Paulinho, Soldado, Adebayor, all on the field.
Wow. I
wonder if he was paid by EA Sports.
Wow, that is a lineup, Rog.
For more on City in terms of in-depth analysis and, in fact, a complete review / Quincy MD-style autopsy of their season.
He was brilliant, Rog. He was brilliant.
We're going to release later this week a pod special.
Special.
With Noel Gallagher on absolutely rambunctious form for about 35 minutes. He held
court
on every single aspect of the rise and fall of Manchester City this season. It was an honour to participate. I think that will come out on Thursday.
Swansea 2, Stoke City 0. Goals from Jefferson Montero, one of my favourite names in the Premier League, and Ki Sung Jung give Gary Monk's men the win, keep them in eighth place. What a season for Swansea, Rush.
Gary Monk, manager of the year.
Yeah. Maybe not, but he certainly deserves some credit, Rog, for the performance of his team.
Ginger manager of the year, then. Would you give him that?
Definitely. I'd give him ginger manager of the year. Okay, in the Championship, Rog, Bournemouth. They're popping bottles down there, Rog, on the south coast. The Cherries won the championship Saturday, defeating Charlton Athletic, my local team, 3-0, solidifying their spot in next year's Premier League. They edged out Watford, who drew with Sheffield Wednesday, but will also be coming up. In the playoffs, the final promotion spot, And a third new friend will be determined via the playoffs. Brentford are going to play Middlesbrough and Ipswich take on Norwich. That's an East Anglian derby, Rog.
Can we get a out of 10, how positive are you? Producer JW, lifelong Ipswich fan of Ipswich's chances against East Anglian rival.
Yeah, it's played over two legs, we should say, home and away. Six out of 10. Six out of 10. That's almost a 50-50 hedge. Winners will meet at Wembley in a winner-take-all final. That's a great game.
Question from GFOP, John McDowell.
Yeah.
Can you predict just how Louis van Gaal will mispronounce the new Premier League teams? I hope Ipswich take the third spot. He'll find that one incredibly tricky. But will we find him welcoming Bonwat and Washful?
Yeah. Yeah, Norwich will be very, very... Norwich? That'll be very hard for him.
I think I'll pronounce Watford. I know that Louis van Gaal is a long-time admirer of the Watford Terriers. I think he'll think he's playing Watford.
Yeah.
My favourite basketballing power.
Amazing story going on at Brentford. We've got to get more into that. All a team completely managed by statistics. Rog, got to get into that. Semi-finals begin this weekend. Brentford versus Middlesbrough. That's 2:45 p.m. Eastern Time Friday. Ipswich versus Norwich, the East Anglian Classic. That is 7:15 a.m. Eastern Time on Saturday.
Could be a long weekend for JW.
Both games on beIN Sports. Montreal Impact, Rog, versus Club America. They were 45 minutes away from MLS glory in the CONCACAF Champions League last week. After earning a 1-1 draw at the Azteca in the first leg of the final, the Montreal and Montreal Impact led 1-0 at halftime in Canada. But the Mexican powerhouse tallied three times in a 16-minute span to once again prevent an MLS team from claiming the title.
Yeah, this was a performance that can only be called very, very Spursy by Montreal Impact. They raised their fans' hopes and fans of the league in general, only to dash them. Mm-hmm. In Montreal terms, the first half was magical. It was like Lorne Michaels. Mm-hmm. Second half was a bit too Megan Draper. Mm-hmm. The whole experience was what I'd call peak CONCACAF.
Yeah.
Americans cheering for a Canadian team against a Mexican opponent called America. But the amount of MLS fans who threw themselves behind Montreal. When an English team is in the Champions League, you pray if you don't support them that they lose.
No, that's not true. I always support them.
You naively want their budget coffers to be... No, you don't. You don't want them to get the riches of going forward.
I cheer for the English teams in the Champions League always.
But in MLS with a central ownership, every single player, hashtag, I think MLS for Montreal, wanted Montreal to win, get the monkey off the league's back of never having won this tournament. There were 61,000 people at the game. Montreal opened the scoring. The night felt magical. It felt like it was going to be the biggest Canadian sporting story since Jesse Palmer was a bachelor back in season 5.
Yeah.
Half-time, they're ahead. Felt like Burnley were about to win the UEFA Champions League. Dominic Adore, I've got to say, what a delight to watch. He's the fastest thing in Canada since Ben Johnson. And it was just a helter-skelter game, no midfield. But then they just wilted. America stepped up, eviscerated the hope and dreams of a nation, of two nations, of MLS, of Don Garber, who'd learnt French, no doubt, for months in preparation for receiving the
Rosetta
trophy.
Rosetta Stone.
Yeah, all that work gone to crap. And it's just a display of clinical finishing which blew the MLS team out of the water. Broadcasters spent the last 45 minutes talking about how the league's budgets have to grow if it's to fulfill its lofty ambitions. The great Hercules Gomez tweeted, "You need more than 11 players over the course of a home and away series. More experience, more quality. Only one way to get that: money." And as the seconds kind of trotted off the clock, Americans suddenly muttered as one, "The Montreal Impact appear less North American, much more Canadian by the minute." I feel for MLS, Davey. They want to win this Champions League so badly so they can move on to the rest of their campaign to be one of the best leagues in the world. But baby steps. First one of their clubs have to win the CONCACAF Europa League.
Yeah. What is that one called? Okay, our guest this week, Rog, a star of one of the hottest movies out right now and could be one of the leaders in our quest for ginger equality. You got to speak with Donald Gleason.
Our guest today is an actor who plies his trade on both stage and screen. He's poised to play a part in what promises to be one of the entertainment events of 2015. We're talking, of course, about his role as an Aston Villa fan in this year's FA Cup final. Not his part in the upcoming Star Wars film, which we won't talk about. But you can see his new film, and it is gorgeous. Ex Machina. The New York Times called it a futuristic shocker. welcome to the pod, Mr. Donal Gleeson.
Thanks for having me here.
Oh, we couldn't be happier. I read an interview with you, beautiful interview, in which you suggested you're such a self-critical perfectionist. You think you single-handedly ruined every film you've ever been in. Is that true? Because it's pretty much the best articulation of how I go through life.
No, I think it's different with Ex Machina. I'm really proud of Ex Machina. I think that film's ended up being really good. But yeah, generally, I watch the stuff I'm in and I just hate myself. That's how I go about my life.
Well, I've got to tell you, if it's true, you've ruined some pretty good movies. Frank?
Yeah.
The Frank Lampard documentary, which has a real hard-hitting story.
Yeah.
Not a lot of people know that behind the scenes.
Frank Lampard.
It was a big fake head the whole time. True Grit. But you star in a movie whose name I've been butchering, Ex Machina.
I say Ex Machina, you say tomato, I say tomato also, because that's the right way to say it.
It's a beautifully haunting exploration about the morality of artificial intelligence. Yeah. I saw a Reddit recently. Mm-hmm. You were talking about Ex Machina.
Getting further away now, but that's fine.
I'm trying. And you were asked, how would you feel about the future of AI, artificial intelligence? And you answered, do you remember?
No.
You meant, on that Reddit, you meant every word you said, it was
this
the truth.
A week ago.
Yeah.
Uh-oh.
You said that.
I'm excited for it and nervous about it, the same as I felt yesterday when Aston Villa qualified for the FA Cup final. Yeah, right, okay, that's true, yeah.
Go on, take us there. Forget AI. There's smarter people to talk about AI with.
There are. You can see it in the movie.
Aston Villa. Tim Sherwood's Aston Villa.
Yeah.
The team that had to cancel their Goal of the Month contest in October.
Yeah.
That Aston Villa turning into Aston Villa. Hear me roar. Liverpool were going to give you a bare bottom spanking. How did that fit? Take us there. Take us there.
It was amazing. You know, I went, I got
you're at
tickets.
The game.
I was at the game. I got my dad. It's bloody expensive to go to football in England, but I got tickets for my dad. My dad's
the wonderful
birthday.
Brendan.
Yeah, so he's an Aston Villa fan too. So it's just one of those opportunities to have a day out, unlike any other, because we hadn't. I don't think we've been in the FA Cup semi-final since the program said like 2000 or something.
Yeah,
you know,
2000. You're in the final,
so we hadn't had the opportunity to qualify for that long, and it was like, screw it, we may as well go. So we went and we got really good seats. I was really lucky. And then Liverpool scored, and it was like, crap, like, the, you know. And then when we scored, it was just unbelievable. And then I had the horrible thought at halftime of, what if we win? Because that was the first time I'd thought, what if we win? I'd assumed we were going. I'm a pessimist by nature. I'd assumed we were going to see him lose. And
Well, turning up that day, you went there with your father to Wembley for this great day out, knowing that at the end you could foresee your own doom.
Well, yeah, I just went saying, enjoy the day, enjoy, like, because the atmosphere. I'd never been to Wembley before, and I was worried that it wouldn't be a great atmosphere and stuff. But it was amazing because of the way it's set up. It's like literally half the stadium, claret and blue, and then there's a dividing line. Then the other half is all red. It was great. And then depending on which way the thing is going, it wasn't like other games, you know, where it's dotted around and the supporters are kind of everywhere.
And when they cut to the Aston Villa fans at the end, when we showed it on the show, you said, these are men who have no idea how to be happy. It was like it was like watching baby giraffes learn to walk. Yeah. An Aston Villa fan.
Like watching Bambi trying to stand
exactly.
up.
Yeah. How did you celebrate that night?
I hugged my dad and then we had a drink or two and we reveled in the fact that we had a victory, but also that we had played really, really well. It wasn't like a jammy thing. I thought we controlled the game for lots of it. I thought they played great. Delph was brilliant. Grealish was fantastic. Bold. And you've got a Larry David thing going
soft
on. You just spot all
soft
the
spot
all
for the balls.
It was amazing. So I was. It was a really special day, and I'm really sad. I will be trying my hardest to get tickets for the final, but I'm not going to be in the country. I think my dad might still go if he can get a ticket. But
I always, whenever Everton get into a final,
You're an Everton fan.
Huge. I always say, whatever it takes, we've got to go. Because in my lifetime, how many times may it happen? Probably very few again. Probably feel the same as Aston Villa. We got whacked by Chelsea a couple of years ago.
Right,
we scored,
okay.
Saha scored in the 34th second, and I knew then we were doomed far too early.
It's like when Ireland score early. You're like, oh, crap.
Let's get
we
to
should
the
do this in the last minute or
too
not at
soon.
All.
Yeah, the whispers went across Wembley far too soon. Let's get to the core issue. Aston Villa. I mean, Irish people, the cliche is they're either United fans or Liverpool fans. You've set me straight on this. Why Villa? Tell us, explain.
They weren't. Look, we've had a rough, whatever, 5 years. But, obviously I inherited them from my dad. In the 80s, you had all these players. Well, I mean, they won the European Cup.
1982?
Right? Uh-huh. Then you had, when I was coming up, I was born in 83, you had, like, the great team that had...
Paul
at
McGrath.
Various points, you had Paul McGrath, you had Steve Staunton, Andy Townsend, Ray Houghton.
Ray Houghton.
You know, all these, I love Ray Houghton. Like, all these great Irish players or players who played for Ireland.
A lot of Americans are choosing the team. Can you just very quickly tell them in one line, two lines, what is the best... The best thing, make the best pitch for Aston Villa support.
Well, I would say if you're a Chelsea supporter, Man City supporter, any of these people, I think a certain amount... You look at Man United, they don't know what to do with themselves now that they're not winning everything. There's like a general sense of what the hell. When the peaks are fewer, they feel much higher. When we won the FA Cup semi-final, Chelsea fans would hardly sniff at that. They would just look around and say, hey,
so
fine.
True.
You know? That was one of the great days of my life. That was one of the great days of my life, was qualifying for the final. And that was only getting into the final, you know what I mean? Was going through against Liverpool.
Listening to you describe Aston Villa fandom, it's like Tess of the d'Urbervilles. It's like happiness was but a fleeting emotion in Tess's life.
Yeah.
In that book.
But when it comes around, then you have to enjoy it. And
you're 31. What is your happiest Aston Villa memory in those 31 years?
Oh, man. Bosnich was good at saving penalties. Well, no, I know that we won. I know that we won the League Cup, or the Coca-Cola Cup, as it was known at the time. We won that a couple times, I believe. And one time, I think we knocked out Man United, possibly on penalties.
Yep.
And I just remember, because two of my brothers were United supporters. You know, they had the world to themselves. And then we beat them, we got the trophy, and I remember that being pretty sweet.
It's character,
that was a pretty
it's
sweet
character
day.
Building, is what you're telling me. I mean, I've got to say, this season, how did you square away? Because that final, you were like Birmingham's Barcelona for moments in that second half when they were knocking the ball around.
Beautiful.
You pressed hard, you got the ball, you toyed with Liverpool. How did you square away in your understanding of the season that semi-final performance under Tim Sherwood and kind of the 659 minutes of goalless football, the perilous position that they're in the relegation zone. How do you explain that?
I'm not enjoying that at all. That's really annoying. We're just down to 2 points now, which is terrifying.
We'll do a quick fire round. Tim Sherwood, madman, saviour, both? Question mark. Does he inspire Donald confidence?
It doesn't matter if he inspires my confidence. All that matters is if he inspires the players in the dressing room. I think what you saw with what he did at Spurs was... inspiring. He got them playing again. Was it Adebayor he brought back in? Yeah. And he's done the same thing with Benteke now, right? He's got him back in. He's playing.
He's a striker whisperer.
It is that kind of thing, you know. And he's and you read, you see the interviews of the players, and you can tell when they're happy. I liked Lambert, by the way. I'm sad he's gone. We got to a place where we were not playing good football, but I think he's a good man. He's a very good manager. And for whatever reason, it didn't work out. Whatever. But Sherwood's the man that we need now. The worry, of course, always is that he won't be the man we need moving forward. That's the same with every manager. And I don't know what his recruiting policy would be, for example. He's totally unproven in that regard. But you have to give him a chance, man. It all depends. If we can beat the drop again, if we can just kick on a little next year.
Please, God.
Because my worry is that Villa might be the sort of club that if they go down, they won't come straight back up. That's my concern.
Fabian Delph. Let's talk about happy things. Balls. He's a wonderful footballer. He's an Englishman with a name like a foreigner. We think that's probably the best kind of combination. An unbelievable gentleman.
We were obviously we were worried for a while. You know, he cost a lot of money when he came, right? Mm-hmm. Was he like 10 million or something crazy?
Randy
like, yeah, as a teenager or something, you know, he came and he was highly rated and and he came and then it wasn't really happening for a while. I think that's fair to say. And God, he's really toughened up and he's playing really, really well. And he signed a new deal and it made me really happy. And he had a brilliant game against Liverpool. And you know, he's somebody to base the team around. But I mean, I wonder if he starts playing for England and all that sort of stuff.
Well, talking about playing for England, Jack Grealish, boy band member, has a couple of good games. Suddenly he's having an identity crisis. Should he keep playing for Ireland as he has done through the youth teams? Or is he suddenly feeling a lot more English? What advice do you have as an Irishman for Jack
Grealish? Come to Ireland, man. Come to Ireland and be a hero immediately and have your family be proud of you.
And enjoy yourself as opposed to be eviscerated for the next 8, 9, 10, 12 years.
Well, there's a lot of truth to that, man. Like, you know, I've never been down on the Irish team. You know, the Irish team can frustrate you because they don't get through, but they should never be expected to get through. We're not built in that way. But if we got a couple of players like that to sign up, man, it would be amazing. It'd be amazing.
Last question about Villa. I'm going to talk to you. Get your feeling on Brad Guzan. God love him. We adore Brad Guzan.
What do you mean, God love him?
Every time he makes a little mistake, he didn't mean to pass it to Kun Aguero last week.
That was rough. That was not great. I was texting my dad. My dad was away, and I was like, I don't know what to tell you.
Are you a footballer yourself?
I played right back, and I was of the... I'm not terribly quick, but I was of the get stuck in as hard as you can, take man and ball sort of scenario.
All elbows.
A lot of sliding tackles, and a lot of tackles in between the ankle and the knee.
Oh, the best
kind. Studs up. Yeah,
sounds
yeah.
Sounds very Jack Colbacky to me.
It's the only way to survive if you're not talented.
J.J. Abrams tapped you to play a secret role in Star Wars.
Uh-huh.
The Force Awakens. What one there is, how did that feel when he tapped you? J.J. Abrams. Is that like having Jose Mourinho pluck you off the training ground? And say,
that doesn't happen.
You're going to be on number 10.
No, because Jose Mourinho doesn't do that.
He does. He says, I'm going to tap you. I'm going to make it. Son, do you feel like...
But then he doesn't use you.
Do you feel... Yeah. Yes, then he does.
JJ used me.
Does that feel like career made when that happens?
No. It's never career made. It is. You know, you get a call up to the first team, it doesn't mean you're staying in there. I got to play a game. Hopefully, this is a terrible analogy. Hopefully, I did okay and I performed all right. But yeah, I want to do really good things in my career, you know? So I want to... That's the pressure to maintain a level.
Did J.J. Abrams make sure you dropped back and picked up your runners and defended as well as attacked, and you weren't just...
No. Because I didn't even attack when I was right back. I let pass forward, and then I stayed back and got ready for the next bone-crunching tackle. That was my modus operandi.
I want to talk about Ash in Black Mirror.
Yeah.
Be right back. A show that's having a belated... And I'd say cult reception, deserved cult reception in America. Does that feel just like another role you played, another show that you've been on? Or is there some kind of panache or ascribe cool points for having been part of that really rather unique project?
It felt cool when I was doing it. I mean, really how it's been received doesn't matter so much. I'd been a fan of the show before. There'd been one series of Black Mirror before I did that one. So I joined in... I joined in for that one episode. I'm really proud of it, and I'm very happy with it now. But it's like, you know, I like the sci-fi thing. I like good sci-fi, so that with that and Ex Machina and Star Wars, I feel like I'm pretty made up for the year.
Can we get a prediction on how the season ends? May 30th, Arsenal, FA Cup final. You lose 1-1 in extra time to a Ron Vlaar own goal. Prediction.
Shut up, man. No. We'll take it and add it on time.
We've heard it. Put your money on it. Support Aston Villa.
Yes.
Go and see Ex Machina. There'll be no relegation. Optimism and despair are on the side of optimism. We are grateful to have you in, Donal.
Thank you very much for having me, man.
Wow. Don't think we've had such erudite Aston Villa analysis on this pod since ever.
Yeah.
Shattered one myth of mine, though.
We never booked Mervyn King, the former chairman of the Bank of England, Rog, who's a big Aston Villa fan.
Hanks won't come on.
Yeah.
And we won't have Prince Harry
on
the pod. On Republican reasons.
Yeah.
But he shattered the myth that I've always had that there's a Hollywood gingy casting couch. Doesn't appear to exist, David.
Yeah.
I always pictured a couch faintly coated in red hairs of dubious origin. Imagine that you could pick one up and DNA test it, and it would be Ron Howard's from when he got the job in Happy Days. But nope. Nope, doesn't exist.
Our first Raven, Rog, is from Nick Sellers. When I was growing up in the MLS... and MLS was in its infancy, the Tampa Bay Mutiny became my club of choice as they were based in my native Florida. When the Mutiny were relegated permanently, the club was disbanded in 2001. I grew fond of the LA Galaxy because A, they seemed to be on TV as much as any MLS club was in those days, and B, they were really, really good. Even before Donovan or Beckham joined the club, American midfielder Kobe Jones was my favorite player, and I have a vivid memory of watching the Galaxy hoist the MLS Cup in 2002 on my dad's portable TV while riding down the highway returning from a weekend soccer tournament. But with soccer returning to my home state, I feel torn. Orlando City's arrival and subsequent ascension to an MLS has my nipples tingling with excitement. As luck would have it, I'm attending an OCSC game in a few weeks as part of a bachelor party.
What?
You guessed it, they're playing the Galaxy. So what do I do, gents? Show up in my old two-star Donovan Galaxy jersey and support the team I've loved for years but have never seen in person because, you know, money. Or throw my weight behind a new club whose close proximity to me makes it likely I might be able to make it to a few games a year. Thanks for your guidance. Courage, Nick Sellers.
What a question.
Oh, it's difficult because this is the problem. In a very big country with expansion... a league still expanding.
Throbbing expansion.
They can put a team right in your backyard when for years you've been supporting someone else.
I mean, we always say in the English Premier League, you can change your partner, you can change your underpants, but you can never, ever, ever change your football team. But that's English Premier League.
That doesn't apply in MLS.
Does it apply to MLS, Dave? New franchises are springing forth out of Don Garber's loins every minute.
Yeah, exactly.
Like illegitimate children.
Yeah.
What I've never is been. The rule? What is the rule? Because I don't.
Where are you from? Buffalo. I've never been to Buffalo. Oh, could we put an MLS franchise there?
What do you? I mean, does it? How does it work in America? Sports franchise.
What does the word city sound like after Buffalo? That's what he's thinking. He's going through every single city name.
Buffalo Wednesday.
Yeah, Buffalo Wednesday. Buffalo Villa. Buffalo Albion. Buffalo Argyle. These are all great. Buffalo and Hove Albion.
Buffalo Cherries.
That would really work.
Well, I mean, when I lived in Chicago, first moved here, I fell in love with the Blackhawks.
Yeah.
Jeremy Roenick's Blackhawks.
Uh-huh.
But then I moved to D.C. And it's just...
Had an amazing time.
Well, the Capitals.
Yeah.
I mean, Ole Kolzig, Peter Bondra, Dale Hunter. Oh, I love Sergei Gonchar. And I just got cleaved to them just by the local media coverage of them. I think new local teams, this is how I think about it, David. You know how Facebook, I read that 20% of divorces now are because Facebook allows you to reconnect to your childhood love and you realize how crap your current partner is and you become overwhelmed by the unfulfilled kind of love of your past.
Uh-huh.
And you just slowly drift from your current partner to those. I do think you will, even if he doesn't want to, I think he will drift towards...
the Galaxy?
No, away
from... or to Orlando?
Yeah, just happens. Facebook... proximity, closeness, touching you, touching me.
See, I find sometimes when I watch a game on television, it happens particularly early on during World Cup games, during the group stage, Rog, and I don't have a particularly rooting interest in the game. I wait for it to start, and I wait for one of the teams to call me. And football will always call me, one team. I will never end up not caring about either side. I will always... find myself called by one team or another.
For me, it's not passive calling, though. For me, I just tote up the number of gingies on each team.
And that's it.
Yeah, by the way, when we're asking this question, I want to know more about the bachelor party.
Yeah.
Any bachelor party that revolves around Orlando City,
yeah,
I've got to say, make sure that it involves the artist known as Breck Shea.
Yeah.
Because somebody's got to hook you up with a donkey to put in the elevator.
Yeah,
Donkeys put themselves in elevators on bachelor parties.
I've spent some time in Orlando, and I have a suspicion that this... that after the match, this bachelor party might be heading down the orange blossom trail, if you know what I'm talking about.
Is that a euphemism?
No, it could be. It would be amazing if that entire street was named after a euphemism. It's entirely possible. The winner of the coveted Guinness Men in Blazers poet, philosopher, soccer scribe, Raven of the Week. Oh, it's Tyler and Sarah. On Saturday, May 2nd, I married my best friend and high school sweetheart
after 8 years of being together. Oh, see, they didn't have to reconnect on Facebook. You learn a lot about each other.
Get off Facebook now is my advice.
Of course,
get
after off Facebook, being together for
you, if you
for
care
that
about
long.
Your wedding and your marriage.
But I'm not sure. No, but this was his best friend and high school sweetheart, Rog. But I'm not sure I understood.
It'd be like Pina Colada, that song where you try and cheat on your wife by answering someone's personal and then you realise it's your wife's personal that you've answered.
Oh, wait a minute. I sense trouble. But I'm not sure I understood just how much she gets me. While exchanging vows, however, I quickly learned how deep our love goes. I read first. I kept them short and sweet to the point and had only a reference or two that she and I would only get. Then she read hers. They were much longer than mine and started out with so many nice things to say about me and the promises she means to keep until death do us part. I was holding in my tears until she made one promise about halfway through. She vowed to always be a blue, never a red, and then I lost it. I'm losing it right now reading this. She may not follow Chelsea FC the way I do, but all that matters is she understands the way I feel about the club and that she knows you can only be one or the other. And when we awoke on Sunday morning, Jose and his men gave us one of the best wedding gifts of all, the Premier League title. Hashtag sport of the present. If Rog can find a negative in this story, oh, he will, then we know once and for all he has no soul. Know that we are celebrating with you, Davo. Cheers. Anything to say, Rog?
Yeah.
Stay off Facebook.
No, nobody loves love more than me.
Yeah, you love love,
don't
you, Rog?
I adore the ineffable.
Yeah.
What Edith Wharton said is, each time you happen to me all over again.
Oh.
And there's nothing better in life than the sound of your partner's laughter.
Yeah.
But like winning the Premier League, love is very hard work. Hard work. And I wish you and Sarah a lifetime of love.
Yeah.
Happiness and health. Yeah. Free of relegation, Tyler.
Yeah.
By the way, someone asked me to one GFOP,
yeah.
I won't name them because their partner may not know this request has been made, asked me to come and officiate at their wedding.
Yeah. And are you going to do it?
I just don't think they should have me officiate at their wedding.
You disapprove of the choice.
I actually sent it to Lexi, producer Lexi, and asked her.
Yeah. And what did Lexi
have
to say?
But it was a good idea. She sent me a long, long email, which I haven't actually had the chance to read yet. I just can't imagine anything good will come from having me.
Yeah.
Marry you, David.
You'll feel terribly responsible.
I just spent the whole wedding ceremony saying, stay off Facebook, guys.
Yeah, very,
just
very
stay
true.
Stay off Facebook.
Your weekend looks like this. Everton versus Sunderland, Rog, 7:45 a.m. on Saturday. Hull City versus Burnley, 10 a.m. Saturday. Chelsea versus Liverpool, 11 a.m. Sunday. What is Jose going to do, Rog? What is he going to do? All games are on the NBC family of networks, and in an MLS, New York Red Bulls versus New York City FC, 7 p.m. Sunday on Fox.
This city's
Sports.
Not big enough for both of them.
There are many other ways to connect to us. One is our Amazon Emporium. Helps keep the show going anytime you go on Amazon for items big or small. Rog, just click off the Emporium page. MIB gets a tiny percentage that allows us to cover the cost of the show.
Well, not the show, a new pair of pants for JW.
Yeah, well, it wouldn't be a show if he wasn't wearing pants.
We can't go around wearing them.
What are you putting in the Emporium this week, Rog?
An album.
Yeah.
Remember those?
Yeah.
It's Carrie and Lowell by Sufjan Stevens.
Uh-huh.
Who I went to see this weekend.
You went to see at that amazing theatre in Brooklyn, right?
King's Theatre.
Oh, you loved it.
It's a recently refurbished Baroque Wonder Theatre from the 1920s. It's worth actually going to a concert there.
Yeah.
Just to see what they've done to this place alone. But I've got to say, Sufjan is a man of magic, part folk, part folklore. And his recreation of this album, which was triggered by the death of his mother, his estranged mother, was a magical meditation on love and loss and longing. Huge number of GFOPs in New York, huge number. And I'd love to get Sufjan Stevens on this show down the line to talk about what he does and how he does it, because the bloke is a poet. All of me wants all of you, if I had to name just one track.
Interesting. I'm not putting in an album, Rog. I'm putting in the Breville Smart Waffle Maker. It's the WM640XL4². One of the things that I was most intimidated about, you know, I co-parent three young children with my wonderful ex, and one of the things that, when becoming a co-parent, one of the things I was really worried about was cooking for my children. And it's actually been one of the joys of like reconnecting in that way with my children is cooking for my children. I love cooking for my children. And one of the things that I think all dads should do.
It's waffle making, sincerely cooking.
It is. It's preparing a meal that your children really enjoy
with a station. I set up stations, so I set up a way for them to go and decorate each of their waffles individually the way they want to eat their waffles. I've got to tell you, on a Sunday morning, Premier League on, waffle maker buzzing, just bowl after bowl after bowl of the mixture going in. There's nothing I enjoy more than waffle making on a Sunday morning.
Imagine you're like Fagin.
And the Breville smart waffle maker, Rog, is just an amazing, amazing piece of machinery. I hate technology that's crap, that doesn't really work. This is an amazing waffle maker.
You've got to pick a pocket or two.
Oh, boys. Very, very true. Get up on a Sunday morning, cook waffles for your children, dads. It's a great thing. We recently released Men in Blazers Unbuttoned, Rog. Now that's what I call Suboptimal Volume 2, the best of 2014 on iTunes, Amazon and Google Play. It's the most suboptimal moments from a year in which Liverpool nearly won the league and the USA nearly won the World Cup. Have a listen and then a sad nap. Check out our Spotify account, men_in_blazers. We just posted a playlist with our favorite jukebox songs. meninblazers.wickerspaces.com/. That's a wonder of the modern world. Also go to our website, www.meninblazers.com. You can sign up for our newsletter, The Raven, there. We produce that with our partner, Guinness. Follow us on Twitter, at Rog Bennett, at Men in Blazers, at Embassy Davies, on Instagram, at Men in Blazers, at Embassy_Davies. We've got a Facebook, Rog, but beware of Facebook. We've got a subreddit, meninblazers.reddit.com, maintained by GFOPs Akshay, Calvin, and Alex. You can always send your ravens to the crap part of Soho. You can always email us at meninblazers@gmail.com.
One last thing before we go. Our thoughts and prayers are with Spurs and England legend Jimmy Greaves, who's in intensive care. Childhood hero, I think of both of ours, right?
Yeah,
David?
Without a doubt. Ross. Both athlete, as a player and a broadcaster.
Remarkable man.
Yeah.
We wish him and his family courage.
Vendorpunk Rog.
War pig.
Who wants to sex Mutombo?
Exposure.
Courage.
Take that, Gloria.
Is that your analysis?
To tweed. Hashtag lean to linen.
Abrigado. Rock on, mate.
Kung fu fight in America.
Love you, Rog.
Love you, Davo. And I love.
I love waffles.
Stay off Facebook.